What's up, everybody? This is Alexander Juan Antonio Cortez. This is the Art of Health podcast. So we're back, and I'm doing something different for this one. I have a guest with me, a lady, Ms. Taylor Burrows, Dr. Babe from Twitter. I wanted to have a conversation with her just because she's an upstanding lady. She's very classy. She's had some interesting insights into relationships, something that I've touched on but not fully dived into. Rather than hear me espouse my views with my young mind, I'm going to talk to somebody who has a female perspective for hopefully something of a more balanced conversation. So I'll let her introduce herself.
Yes. So Dr. Taylor Burrows, Taylor, Dr. Babe, I go by many names. I like to reinvent myself. I'm a marriage and family therapist and mental health counselor based in the Cayman Islands as of now. But I'm also really interested in film and acting, media. Right now I'm also doing a side gig, being a news anchor, which is really fun. So I'm going out on my own now. So I'm just transitioning out of employment. I've been with the same company for 10 years and I'm a few weeks away from fully launching. So it is an exciting time in my life and I'm really happy to be a part of your audience and maybe share some insights on femininity. We'll see.
Cool. No, very cool. No, I like people that are versatile with what they do. I've even told my audience this. I mean, I've been a personal trainer now for 9 years. I've also am a ballet dancer. My original career plan was to be in the arts. It was not to be in a technical field. And I've always found people that are, you know, like I said, versatile with what they do. And you have depth and breadth to you. It's not just one thing. And obviously we live in a culture now where you have to be pretty multi-talented, but you know, on the subject of the news anchor, how did you get into news anchoring? Just out of curiosity.
I guess being good at being on camera and being on stage and stuff like that, because I did grow up acting and modeling when I was much younger. But when I got here back to Cayman, I'm from here, but I left and went to school in the States for 18 years and then moved back. And kind of the first month that I started my job, kind of a green therapist at that point, like brand new junior therapist, fully licensed, but just brand new. My boss said, okay, well, one of the things I need you to do is we have a 15 minute TV spot every week. Hmm. So there you go, just run with it. And I did that for so long. One time I looked up the archives on the TV station and there were about 800 segments that I did over the past 10 years. So they know me quite well and they know I can handle being on TV and sort of ad-libbing and spontaneous, you know, conversation. So they thought of me, and I guess because of my PhD and my background, I have some credibility and integrity to bring to that role. So it was a good fit. Good fit.
That's very cool. So there are 15-minute segments. Were they what, on family therapy, on relationships, just on mental health stuff, or?
Yeah, it was called Inner Peace. So it was the segment on wellness, basically.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Very cool. So you do you still have like clients, patients now that you work with, or is it just?
I do. Yes. So I'm basically, we call it termination when you end a client therapist relationship. It's a horrible word.
Really? But,
we have to ethically give them a few months to process ending the relationship. So it's an interesting practice. But anyway, so especially being in a small island, people don't really say goodbye, you know, officially, because you just run into them in the store and you're like, oh, hey, you know. Mm-hmm. But I am seeing my clients still and wrapping things up if I can and transferring them to my colleagues if I can. But also, you know, as a businesswoman, I do hope that some of them follow me eventually. I'm not trying to steal anybody, but it happens and it's just an organic thing. So I have a lot of clients that have been through trauma. And so I've had, you know, a long relationship with them, and some of them may just prefer to stay with me because I work a lot with survivors of sexual abuse and sexual trauma. My marital therapy couples, whether they're married or not, or they're, you know, just in an interesting situation. I'm really good at that. I love dealing with relationships, and there's not really a lot of expertise on island in that. And my expertise is different. So, you know, all the information that we talk about on Twitter, everything that I've learned in my life and my training and just the person that I am, my personality, I bring it to the room, and I don't sort of regurgitate book knowledge, which I think a lot of people do. So I think those clients, you know, will hopefully follow me as well. But that's my focus, is really just focusing on relationships, self-development. I like to call it too, professionals with heavy burdens, you know, whether it's officers or judges or surgeons or politicians, you know, people that have this crisis of conscience and don't know what to do with it because either one, they have a big ego, or two, they're afraid of confidentiality breaches, or they just don't know how to begin the process of figuring out what is this rumination going on in their minds and their, you know, souls or whatever. So I kind of want to focus on that kind of person, not necessarily the severely mentally ill.
Gotcha. That's interesting. Having a career as a personal trainer, the running joke in personal training industry is always that you end up being someone's therapist. It's a very cliched thing. You know, people talk. I've realized that if you put two people together for any amount of time, that's 30 minutes to an hour, at some point, someone's going to want to start, you know, opening up stuff, and the other person, either you listen to or you don't. But obviously, my career has been very much like an outer game, as I call it, kind of setting. Yeah, I'm working with people physically, then I'm trying to pull something out of you mentally, where obviously your environment, you're going the opposite direction. What got you into wanting to be a therapist, counselor, just attraction to the work itself?
I always find that a difficult question to answer. I'm a very intuitive person, even though I'm an ENTP, so like I think a lot as well. But I remember in high school, I was a very smart, obviously, and intelligent, but I mean, my
PhD. They'll just hand those out. Yeah.
But my strength in high school was actually math. I was very, very good at math. And we ended up in such a small class. It was three of us and our professor or teacher. And we basically sat outside in like a little atrium or whatever you call it. And we philosophized. That's what we did for class. And we would have a little bit of math, and then we would just, he was an Indian teacher. And we would have these amazing conversations. And I really loved them. They really, you know, they made my mind expand. And I felt that that was so valuable. And then I took a psychology class for fun, and I thought that was really cool. And so when I went into university, I wasn't sure what I was going to major in. I kind of thought I would go into engineering. And I had placed out of all the basic classes from high school already, so I just could take anything I wanted to, not what I had to. So that was a kind of a blessing. And I ended up taking... I just took sociology classes, I took philosophy classes, and psychology classes. And so I ended up majoring in all three. So it was kind of like, which one do I pick at the end of it?
Gonna have choices.
Yeah, they said, you know, you can't get your BS, your bachelor's in everything. You have to pick one, otherwise you'd have to pay three times. I think that's a stupid rule, but anyway, so I just picked psychology. That's how it worked out, because I felt that would be more useful. I could turn that into a career versus being a sociologist or being a philosopher.
Yeah. Philosophy is kind of I'm going to say it's a useless liberal arts degree, but you're good at thinking. That's really cool. So you had a fast track for all three things and just pick the one that seemed most, I guess, advantageous long term. Huh.
Yeah, but I think that the unique thing was just giving the opportunity of not having to take anything specific, you know, not doing what you should do. Mm-hmm. What do you want to do, and what kind of path do you choose to take? I think that's an important question for everybody to ask themselves. You know, if you had no money wasn't a question, right? And you didn't have to worry about health. What would you do with your life? You know, like that kind of question. So that was the opportunity that I faced when I went to college. And so it was a blessing. It really helped me figure out who I was for the most part. There was still a lot more growth after that, though.
you gotta make a decision for the future, which that's always the confounding question I raise when people want like prescriptive advice. Like, what should I do? Where are you going? Yeah, I get questions a lot, you know, just because of, you know, social media presence. And I realize always, but for a lot of them, I've taken a therapeutic perspective to talking with people, because I realized years ago, you know, like first client I ever had was a female, overweight, started crying like the first time I started talking to her about being overweight. And for example, she slept with her daughter and being single and not feeling like she's attracted to men. And I was like, I was 20 at the time. And I was not prepared to, you know, hear all this, but I realized, okay, I'm going to have to be really good at listening, really, really good at listening to do this. But that's always the question I pose to clients for a long time is, you know, everyone wants something. We all want things, but where do you think you're going with it? Otherwise, any advice given any directions doesn't mean anything. You know, you're picking things that's based upon, you know, like you just said, what you're told to do, which hopefully is somewhat in line with what you want to do, or maybe not.
Exactly.
Go.
So I have a question for you.
Go ahead.
Have you done any of your own kind of therapy, counseling, personal growth and development based on like someone else guiding you?
I have not. Wait, I take that back one time, actually. Once. When I was we hadn't broken up yet. Ex-girlfriend, actually, near the end of the relationship, she wanted me to go to therapy, which I was not for. And I went to one session, which was actually quite nice. I just talked about how, you know, the relationship, myself, my life had kind of breaking down at that point. This was a year and 13 months ago. And then that was it. Then I left, and then we broke up. Yeah, we broke up shortly thereafter. I'm like, well, yeah, therapy was for her, which is not a good reason, I think, to go to therapy. That was the only one time.
It's an interesting experiment. It really is. And if you just really give it a go, sometimes it can be quite, I like your word, transformative, the way that you said it in your email about flow.
Oh, yeah.
I liked that reframe of the word. But yeah, no, I remember doing my own therapy because we have to, in order to be a therapist, you have to go through your own therapy. And yeah, it was really helpful. I went when I was in a really unhealthy relationship in college. Mm-hmm. I went by myself for various reasons, but I have anxiety. I think a lot of ENTPs do as well. But in general, everybody has anxiety, everyone has depressed mood, but it mm-hmm. doesn't necessarily mean you're, you know, there's something wrong with you. That's a normal human emotion, but it should be a temporary state, right? That we can self-regulate out yeah. of. But anyway, yes, I do, when I'm not able to regulate myself, I get stuck in an anxious frame of mind. Mm-hmm. So I have gone for that, and I have gone for my own history of abuse and trauma. So that was really essential considering I work with that all the time. Imagine if I never dealt with my stuff. So, I mean, you're not a therapist, but what I'm thinking is since you do kind of this pseudo therapy with people as a mentor, as a guide, that, I don't know, maybe it could be an interesting process for you.
It could. I'm pretty open to stuff in general. Subject of trance. Yeah, I got that from Milton Erickson, honestly, since, you know, if you're familiar with him. But
I should be, probably.
He's a therapist. He has a notable book, My Voice Will Go With You. But he was very renowned for being able to sort of impact people very quickly, where he'd have these short 15, 30-minute sessions. And he was just very intuitive guy. He'd listen to the person talk a little bit. He'd tell a story with some lesson embedded in. He grew up on a farm, had polio when he was younger. So he had sort of this homespun rhetoric that would hit people really hard. And then, you know, he'd sort of send them on their way. But he was a hypnotist. And that was one of the statements of, you know, my voice will go with you. So we'll talk you through this process if you used to be able to hear me. The idea of transformation, which, you know, it sounds, you know, somewhat fancy. But I realize that when you're physically in a state, you know, like if you're lifting, you know, hypothetically, you're in a physical situation where your mind has to focus for the first time on one thing. You're being confronted with something that you question whether you can do it or not. So, you know, the can I or can't I? It's a real question to you. And at the same time, you're in this heightened biochemical arousal state where you have adrenaline going, you have, you know, self-doubt creeping up, you're tired, you're having to take direction from somebody. You have ego resistance to taking direction. You have the fact that you haven't taken care of yourself properly. So and then at the same time, I'm trying to talk you through this. So it is something of a hypnotic state, I've realized, watching people work out. It is. You'll see it with people. They get very, very, very focused. They get very much more attentive. But the transformation phenomena, when you're in that state, you start having association with whatever it is that you're conflicted with mentally. stuff starts coming up out of the subconscious. And I've seen that with people so many times over the years where, I mean, it could be something where you're on the last minute of a circuit and you are straining like hell to do push-ups, which you are bad at and can't do. And, you know, these girls can't do push-ups. And somehow the act of doing that also brings up, the ex-husband that was really harsh on you and mentally abusive. And then you get people to these mental states, and what they'll talk about afterwards is not the exercise. It would be whatever it was that came up with by association. Yeah, and that happened. I mean, like I said, year one of training clients where, I realized, like, obviously we process things while we train, but I didn't realize that it got people to that place, all the time. And then how do you deal with that as the, professional? In my case, oftentimes I would just listen, and I'm trying to offer something where I'm like, well, that's nothing to do, supposedly nothing to do with what we just did, but let me try to tell you something. It's obviously it's a deeply personal statement you just shared. But Milton, he deemed that, he's like, it's transformation. If you push people hard enough where you comfortably get them there, you go into something of a trance, and then the mind just sort of merges in on itself. And then whatever comes out. And that's usually when you have some kind of breakthrough, or you admit something to yourself that you've not wanted to admit, or maybe you get hit in the face by what the therapist trainer said, and then you have to think about it really hard. So,
right.
But that's where, that's where I got that from.
Well, the physical element of my life is volleyball. So I'm a beach volleyball player, and I played for the national team, but I quit. Like, I resigned and everything in August. But yesterday I got to play again for the first time since August, and I won every game. It was awesome. I was totally, like, ecstatic. It's just, when you have a passion like that, it's definitely one of those things you can get to that place so much faster.
Mm-hmm. So national volleyball team. So I assume that Cayman Islands national volleyball team.
Well, yeah. I mean, we're a small pond, but we do play the big dogs. So we have usually we have a tournament every year where the Olympians come. So last year I played in the tournament. So I played USA. I played Cuba. I played Puerto Rico, and we actually came. My team came eighth. So there, it's 2-on-2, and we had two girls' teams. So the other team didn't do as well as we did, but I was really happy with that. But you know what? I don't think I'm going to get any further. So now I'm like ready to focus on my business and do that for fun.
That's pretty good. That's pretty cool, though. I mean, I don't know anything about the Cayman Islands, honestly. Like, what's the population of the island?
About 60,000.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah.
It's basically just like a city on an island. Okay.
Yes, it's very small. But the interesting thing about our community is that Caymanians are only half of the population. The other half are expatriates. So a lot of people come here to work, and a lot of people end up staying. But they're all from everywhere, all over the world. I mean, we have a lot of Filipinos now. We had a lot of Hondurans. We have Canadians. We have Americans. We have British people, South Africans. We don't have a lot of Chinese and Japanese yet, but there are, like, Australians. There's so many people that, the Wanderlusters, they love to come here and work in the service industry or the hospitality industry and build up some savings and then travel. It's a good hub to travel South America from. There's some cool people here.
That is very cool. I mean, I imagine in your sort of patient practice, you've probably had a mix of people that have come through the door.
Yeah, well, I cater to open-minded people, obviously, because I'm quite transparent. So the conservatives who know me, because I'm very visible on social media and everything, they don't really want to come to see me. So I'm okay with that. I'm okay with catering to people who are, they're willing to connect to me as a person, not just the job.
Yeah. Interesting. Do you have a defined sort of strategy where, some people like they're cognitive behavioral therapists. Is there something that's a specialty or mode of yours, or is it more just go by?
Well, I was trained in solution-focused narrative and systemic therapy. So it's kind of an eclectic approach, but it's really person-centered. Solution-focused is based on not seeing the person as the problem and seeing the solution is something that we can get to quite quickly. If we make little changes, we can create big outcomes. So we just try to go in, tweak something, reframe something, and then come out of it without making the patient or the client dependent on therapy. So you want to empower the person to feel that they can fix themselves, right?
Yeah.
And I love it when people come, they see me for, I don't know, like a handful of times, and then I never see them again, and they think, oh, well, I didn't need therapy anyway. Like, I can just figure that out myself. So that's when I feel like I've done a good job, is when they don't even feel like they did anything or needed help or anything like that.
I can understand that. I mean, maybe this is me being mean. I've had family members who have been in therapy for a long time, and I've never really seen any improvement in their way of being. But they've been going to some semblance of therapist for like, 10, 15, 20 years. And I always wonder what gets talked about exactly. Or maybe they just need a friend. Like maybe it's just that friend. Yes. I have.
There are some people that I have not kicked out of therapy, and they come all the time for years. But it's a case-by-case basis sometimes. You have to really figure out, that person's life circumstances. If they have chronic illnesses, if they are very isolated, it's the only thing that they sort of prioritize for themselves, and they get a lot out of it. Even if I don't feel like it's very good, like sometimes I have to take my ego out of it and just look at it from their perspective. And it makes a big difference in their lives. So there are some exceptions to that. And, that's just one approach. But the narrative is a really interesting approach. It's based from an Australian theory about basically how we end up being the protagonists in these stories, these narratives in our lives that are not our own. And basically there's some sort of dominant, omnipotent energy like that is really writing our stories. And so if we can figure out what our preferred story is, we can re-author our stories into a life that we want to live and that we are really taking agency in to develop, our happy, good life.
That makes sense. Yeah. I've coined that in a phrase at times with people. You're either, sort of the hero of your own story or the enemy of it, or you can be both at the same time. So,
Absolutely.
Pick one.
So they're definitely not, I don't come from a medical model. A lot of psychologists come from more of a medical model where they see a pathology in a person and they do these sort of very intrusive techniques. And there's a time and a place for that. So that's why I work really well with my team, because I'll people who are very acutely ill, they'll see my colleagues who are clinical psychologists who do those types of techniques. And then once they sort of stabilize them, then they send them to me and I help them with the more real life stuff.
Very cool. So but how long have you been practicing then? I mean, if it's been...
Since 2005.
2005. What's changed since you first started? Oh. Like for yourself? I mean, I know it's a massive question, but like for me...
So much, yes. When I say it's a really interesting and exciting time in my life, I mean it. So much is happening. Like I've been separated for 3 years and I just served my husband with the divorce papers on Monday. And he flipped out. It was the strangest thing. He should have known it was coming. I preempted it. Like I told him, by the way, when I get paid, I'm going to go to the courthouse and file the papers. Mm-hmm. He's like, okay, cool. Yeah, I'm ready. And I don't know what happened, but anyway, so I've been in damage control mode the past two days, but I ended up, he told me, he's like, you know what, just come get them. So I stopped by and picked up the signed papers yesterday.
So you did sign them. Okay.
Yeah. One step closer. So that's soon. But it's a nice feeling, I think, and timed well with kind of, if you want to call it a divorce from my employer that I've been with for 10 years. Mm-hmm. So it's really a big sort of caterpillar butterfly moment for me when I'm launching into full freedom and entrepreneurship.
Cool. Okay. Very cool. So but he signed the papers after he got over freaking out though?
Yeah. I mean, he called my mother. He called my boss. I mean, I don't know what was going on, why he got triggered like that, but I think it was a control thing. I think maybe he thought he would serve the papers on me or something. I don't know.
I mean, the male mind, I think sometimes when I get questions a lot from guys who have been broken up with their broken up with by their girlfriends. That's like a thing that I get questions about, along with everything else. And I think there's always this male, there is, I think, like a part of it's like a masculine ego where, like, you know, the relationship can be ending, things can be going poorly, but to have the woman be the one that says, like, no, this is ending, and that's the initiator. There's this, it's like this 12-year-old boy kind of reaction where, regardless of how mature you are, regardless of how prepared you are, you just get mad. You know, and it happens.
Yeah, I figured this might be a good segue into male-female dynamics.
Yeah, no, that's a perfect segue. So, I mean, so you, I imagine you've worked with men, you've worked with women. What is there a difference between the two, you think, in regards to?
Oh, absolutely. And I love working with men. It's always interesting because I have to remember I had a new client a couple days ago and he just couldn't look at me. It was the funniest situation, but I feel like if you don't expect me, like you see my name, Dr. Taylor Burrows, you haven't looked me up, you have no idea. And you walk in, you're like, oh shit, you know, how am I supposed to like pay attention or whatever? I don't know. And usually it's because they've had some kind of, if it's a marital thing and they've come on their own, it's because it's a fidelity issue. And so they're all of a sudden like, oh, she's going to think I'm an asshole, or am I attracted to her? Or, you know, they go through all this stuff in their minds. And so I have to kind of, I have to be conscious of that. It doesn't mean I have to deal with it directly, like overtly, but I do have to be conscious of that. And I told this guy, because oftentimes it's about confidence. And that's one of the things I've really appreciated about my experience in our community in Twitter, is that I've really learned a lot and I've integrated it into what I already knew. And it's been really helpful for me in dealing with men, because I've always aligned with men in a lot of ways, and it's helped me understand myself as well. But I told him, I said, you know what? Ironically, you're coming to a woman to help build your confidence and self-esteem. And, you know, some people might say that that's like the worst idea, but I advised him to look up some mentors in male confidence building and self-development. So that's his homework for the week. So he might find some of you guys and connect. I've already referred plenty of people and they've made connections with some of our, you know, peers on Twitter. Yeah, so it's great to have that ability to connect and relate to the masculine mind and the masculine experience, but knowing that I'm a woman and being very cognizant of my femininity and that, you know, there's a different dynamic at play there.
I think so. Women are tests of reality for men. Like, you know, you're an attractive woman. A good woman is essentially like truth serum. Yeah, that's, I've seen that with men where, you know, if you have to talk to a woman or the act of having to be, I don't know if vulnerable is the right term, but like, you know, be honest in a situation, like, okay, I'm going to have to talk about myself, and it's not a guy listening, it's a female. There is an aspect of sort of like being a dark mirror in a way, where I told a guy this last night, he was asking about, you know, I had a kid, he was asking about my relationship. She's like, well, you know, what have women taught you? I'm like, that's literally, you're asking me for everything about everything. I can go on and on, but you know, the way I deem them, like, women are with their tests of reality and their mirrors to yourself. Every kind of insecurity that you have, every kind of confidence issue, every bad thing that you've done that you're guilty about with an ex, or anything and everything that, you know, is a place of discomfort for you will come up if you have the right girl in front of you. That will happen to you. And you're either going to have to face it or you're going to try and run away from it. You know, put up some kind of front to hide that. Yeah, and I told him, if you're perceptive and you're honest with yourself, you can learn something about yourself. You can. Yeah, that's, you know, that's in a way like almost what a muse is. Or for men that are at ease with women, it's a level of, you know, let's say confidence. It's a level of comfortness where you're not worried about sort of, you know, getting hit in the face. Yeah, in that way. For men that are uncomfortable with women, you know, like your patient, you walk in and it's like the oh shit reaction. Like, yeah, that's why, you know, attractive women are always like, I've always found that really fascinating to me, since obviously, you know, like I've not had perhaps struggles with women that a lot of men have had. I've always been a good looking guy, women generally like me. But you can take an attractive girl, you can put her in a situation where she's around men, and everyone's reaction is like, you can see like the core of what they are immediately. Some guys are interested, some guys are confident, some guys completely just lose their mental stability. Mm-hmm. Yeah, then my question, I always, you know, I'm always in the belief that, you know, everything relates to everything. If the way you deal with one thing is the way you deal with everything. Like, okay, so if you're in a situation where you have to face up to yourself or you don't know what to do, is this how you react to everything all the time? You know, because, you know, if a woman does this to you, like, what does the rest of life do to you? Because it is the rest of life.
I'm really impressed that, I don't know if that's the right word, but that you shared that with that young guy. Like, I think that's really helpful for them to hear. Because, you know, there's been conversations I've had where maybe I've said that I've threatened a guy, you know, that he was threatened by me, and then the ego kicks in and they get defensive. They're like, you didn't threaten him. Like, it wasn't about you. But I didn't mean it in a condescending way. But the way you describe it is kind of what I was talking about. It's just that mirror. Because I do, that's my job. I mean, I do bring that out in people, and I can't help being like that in my personal life too. And obviously, you know, being divorced, people question that all the time. How can you be a good marriage therapist if you're divorced? You know, and I have to kind of deal with that a lot. And it's just a lot of assumptions and myths about how to be successful in relationships and what makes you an authority on it, right? To me, it brings a lot more sort of like a holistic perspective for me, because I know what it is to be in a long-term relationship, in a marriage that was good enough. Like, it had all the basic components, but I wasn't happy. I don't think he was happy, and he wasn't well. And so it's about not doing what you think you should do and actually doing what you need and what makes you happy. And I've been in a lot of, you know, relationships or situationships along the way. And, you know, I'm single. So I know what it's like to be happy and single. I know what it's like to be sad and single. And I know what it's like to be in a relationship and, you know, things not working out. But I'm okay with that at the moment. And it's weird because I've gone through such like a progression and evolution on my own self-development on that front. But for the first time, I'm actually really content being alone. And I'm kind of like guarding myself right now because I feel like, oh my God, every situation I get into, it's a disaster. So I've made some significant changes right now. I'm really being very protective with my space and my energy. And I'm okay with it. It's not like I feel like I'm, you know, not just lonely, but like, you know, I'm a very sexual person. So it's like, okay, I'm not having sex. It's been how many months? Oh my God. Like, I'm not dying, which is good. It's really good. That puts me outside of the realm of danger.
Situationship. That's a really good way of saying that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, you just got me thinking. I've been asked that occasionally at times where, like, you know, are you, it's a very common thing, like the male sphere with guys, like, to, you know, what does it mean to be good with women? Now I think it's the same thing, like being good with relationships, you know, like, so yourself, like, you're, you know, you're divorced. Does that mean that you don't know what makes a healthy relationship function? You know, because I know people that have been married for 20 years and they have a relationship made in hell. I wouldn't really want to know what they had to say about relationships. It's going to be very shaded advice, but that's something I've told guys at times where it's like, okay, let's say, you know, again, this question's, you know, to be good with women, you know, when you're a young guy and you're a young man, that the idea of that is like, okay, if I can get a girl to sleep with me, well, I'm good with women. You know, like, I had sex, guys, like, I, you know, it's like, okay, good for you. But then, you know, there's a level beyond that where, like, getting laid is not that hard if you, you know, are not socially defective. Mm-hmm. So can you actually handle being with a woman beyond that? Do you know how to have a relationship? You know, is that something that you feel like you're good at? And 99% of the answer is no. Guys have zero idea. You know, that's why I've always been kind of very dissuaded from sort of like the pickup spear, you know, pickup artistry, that kind, you know, that sort of, you know, segment. There's something to it, to the fact that I realize a lot of guys, they have this zero confidence, don't know how to talk, can't have a conversation, no sense of humor. There's nothing. There's no, you know, there's no sense of being at ease. So being able to learn kind of those tools, so to speak, it's useful. You know, then maybe you get the girl to like you, and okay, she'll go home with you. Do you know what to do beyond that first night, so to speak?
Right.
And most guys don't. They have zero idea, which then, you know, gets into like the larger question of what is your relationship with femininity? What is your relationship with women in general? Mm-hmm. Yeah, what is that? And, you know, is there anything there at all? Do you have absolutely no idea of how to handle or conduct yourself? Like, do you even know who you are? Then also like begs the question too of like, okay, well, where are you at in the sort of development of like being a man? You know, a lot of guys, they have, it's this, again, it's a sort of different contrast. Like everybody wants to be with somebody or be wanted by somebody, but they really don't know how to be alone themselves and who they are.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. And then in the step of trying to, you know, have a relationship with somebody, when you're discontent with, you know, your own being and the other person is trying to make you happy, but you don't, when you have someone that's trying to make you happy, but you don't know who you are, there's going to be issues that arise. Yeah. Lots and lots of issues.
Definitely. Yeah. You have to know yourself. I mean, I think you can kind of learn and grow along the way in some situations, like in a relationship if you're already coupled. But for the most part, I mean, I try to encourage young people who come to see me if they're dating and single and looking at self-development to wait and to really explore those things. It's not appropriate anymore to like rush into marriage and kids when you're 21. It's just the world is a different place now. So I think, especially in small towns and places like Canaan, if you don't know what you want or you don't know what makes you happy, you fill that gap or that void with a person. And it's just a quick fix. And then you put all of the pressure on them to fill your needs, you know? And I think you don't learn how to take care of yourself. You don't learn how to have that type of agency in your life. And it just really handicaps people. And then they'll see me in 15 years in marital therapy when the shit's going down the toilet. And, you know, they don't know what happened. And then they're like scared to be alone because they don't have any of the emotional resources to handle that. And they feel like not just a failure in their marriage, but they feel like a failure in life and that they've missed, you know, the opportunity to do everything with their youth that they could have done otherwise. So yeah, it's hard to just focus on the treatment aspect. I really try to focus on the prevention too. So trying to, to be honest, that's why I do what I do so visibly, because you don't know who you're impacting. And it starts young with social media. People are looking at TV and radio and podcasts and all of this stuff at a very early age. So if we can get this information out there to prevent people from becoming entrenched in misery, basically, then I won't have to do so much work on the other end of trying to treat them later on when they're old and scared to death that they're going to die unhappy and alone.
You won't have to unfuck them later.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a good. That's a good way of saying. I mean, that's why I've been more visible with my own stuff, story, dirty laundry. Just, you know, sort of, you know, more of my being is, I guess you'd say, being more vulnerable on social media, where I, you know, making it more personal. Because I realize like people are always watching you, especially if you have any kind of public profile. Having 1,000 people follow you is not a small number of people. You know, people will take what you say very seriously, and they do use it. It's not, you know, relative to my life, like I made most of my 20s, I didn't waste them, but I made a lot of mistakes, which probably good to go to therapy about, you know, if I was being honest, whatever. I would like people to do better than me, you know, at least in the sensibility of you could probably take some of what I've done and avoid causing the same disasters for yourself.
Right.
You know, or you could, the position I was in, I was, I'll be 29 this year. I was 27. I was in a long-term relationship at the time. You know, and I realized that, you know, as a man, like I didn't have anything to show for myself in my 20s, really. You know, I had lived a lot. I traveled. I had partied hard. I had a successful career, you know, at that time, you know, more in the fitness industry. Didn't have any financial stability. Didn't have any financial mindset. Didn't have any savings. Didn't have anything that would actually provide any sense of providership for actually being in like a long-term relationship of something serious. I had nothing. I had like $500 to my name, was behind on rent, and then trying to see this girl in a long-term relationship at the time who wanted like a kids and family. And at the time I wanted that, I thought for myself. Yeah, but then I also had the question, I really didn't know what I wanted. Because I'd had this career in fitness, which I never really planned on having, which, you know, the question of where do you want to go? What do you want? I was doing something that was fairly accidental. It was not intentional. It was not planned out at all. So then her test of me, so to speak, was since, you know, she was upset that she's like, you don't have your shit together at all. And I'm like, you're right. I don't. Which was a hard thing to admit. Then Yeah, it goes back to that, you know, like women test you. It's like, wasn't that she was even trying to be aggressive about it? Like, she chewed me out hard, and like, did I deserve that? I'm like, she was right. Mm-hmm. She was very, very, very right. So I had to overhaul kind of everything. So I ended up at this point, you know, it was like a year and a half ago. I was like, okay, I'm going to have to, you know, I had to ask myself the question of, one, what do I really want? But then two, like, okay, how do I build that? Right. And that's been the process the last, you know, so many 18, 20, I guess maybe like 19 months on, you know, Twitter, social media, which, yeah, I think people have seen from when I first started, you know, with a physical, with a media presence till now, like it's, you know, it's changed. You know, obviously green growth has happened.
Right. What do you envision your unique success looking like?
Honestly, the reason I do this, I enjoy it, but ballet is my thing. Like I started dancing when I was 16. You know, that's when I got into dancing, got into ballet. So the way I always deemed it, like I sort of came of age in the land of women. So 16 years old, I was in high school, a sophomore. I was around teenage girls, you know, like all the time, you know, like 24/7. But I was around them in an environment where I was on the inside looking in, you know, say it that way, where it's all women, it's all girls. And it's not a situation where they're dealing with you, let's say, as like, they're not dealing with you in the real world as, okay, it's guys and girls talking. I was oftentimes the only guy or the only heterosexual guy. So you see women how they really are with each other. You know, right. Since I was, you know, there's different spheres to that. Obviously, it's almost, I don't know if I'd say it's akin to, you know, like a woman being in a locker room. You know, I don't think that really works, but it's a man in the land of women where you can see women for what they are. And that was like sort of very, almost like red pill for me in a way, I guess, to use that term. You know, since, you know, as a teenage boy, you're used to girls dealing with you. Like there's a sense of like, you know, unknownness, otherness of like, oh, you know, like you don't understand each other that well. So I was in that environment, and then, you know, what attracted me to ballet, honestly, was just the beauty of it. Like I've always been a beauty addict. I love beautiful things, just period. You know, I love women, I love nature, anything that's beautiful, it captures me. And I wanted that. So I saw ballet and I was like, I want that. I want to be that. I want to have that. I want to hold that in my hands, you know, metaphorically, literally, and experience that. And that was very rapturous. So I was 16. You know, at the same time too, you're around women all the time. For, you know, for me, feminine energy, like I need that to function properly. If I'm around guys too much, I get hyper aggressive, just like very antagonistic. I don't do well. You know, so I like, you know, this personality. You know, I've always been kind of oxymoronic, where it's like it's two polarities. I'm either at one end of the extreme or whatever the other. Okay. So I don't know if I'm answering the question at all, but so I got into ballet, and I did that from 16, 18, 19. 19, I got really injured. So I tore off my hamstring tendon, like ruptured my hamstring tendon on my left leg, broke my left foot. And I couldn't dance since I was just, you know, basically just kind of crippled from that. But that was my only career plan that I had, was just, I was going to be a ballet dancer. And then once that got taken away, I was just angry. You know, I was angry, and I didn't have anything else that was a backup at all. And I realized at the time that my, you know, liberal arts dance choreography degree was not going to be useful for anything but that. So I got into personal training. One is just sort of like a gig because I thought it'd be fun. I did love the body. Like it was very enjoyable for me physicality wise to learn that and practice that, but it was never planned. It was not like a question of like, oh, this is what I really want to be doing. I didn't know what else to do. I didn't really have an alternative, but I kept doing it for, you know, 20, 21, 22. I'm still doing it technically for almost 10 years. And I got really, really, really good at it. I got world class at it, legitimately. But it was never what I wanted. So I always had this antagonistic relationship with it, of, you know, really loving it and, you know, having the mastery of it and wanting to learn. But at the same time, I had this sort of disgust with it in myself, where, you know, if you, like, and I had clients ask me, like, oh, is this what you want to do? Since, you know, I was very monomaniacal. I just trained. I wasn't trying to be, you know, I lived in LA for like 5 years in Hollywood. Trained entertainment people, trained actors. And I would get asked that, like, oh, so is this what you want to do? Like, you're not trying to act or model or sing. I'm like, no, this is all I do. Oh, is this what you want though? Hell no. I'm like, I'm just doing this because it's how it worked out. But, you know, when I was with my ex, you know, kind of that question kind of came up of like, well, what do you really want? And I looked around and, you know, okay, I'm working this job. I'm doing this. I really don't want this. Like, I'm tired of this in a way. I've always been tired of it. So I got back into ballet to see if I could. And, you know, there was, I had the questions of, you know, whether the injuries had healed enough to allow that. And I actually could still train, so I kind of got back to doing that. But then that ended up bringing up an issue of, like, what do you love more? And I had, and maybe this is me being presumptuous, you know, I don't know, but I had this realization when I was 16 where I love ballet to a level where for me to be with somebody long-term, they'd have to be a ballerina. Most ballet dancers end up with other ballet dancers. It's just, it's very common. It's one of those things that consumes your whole life, your whole psyche, your whole soul. You can't really relate to a normal person at all. I mean, they can relate to you, but you can't relate to them since what it is that you are, they're never going to be. So they can't really understand you. And I had that realization when I was 16, 17, like, damn, I'm never going to be able to be with somebody, I don't think, unless they just are another dancer. They're going to have to be a ballerina, and that's it. That's a small pool of people, obviously, to draw upon.
Yeah.
So I realized that then. And, you know, the funny thing was when I, you know, got out of college and I was dating, that somehow came up, you know, not explicitly per se, but that came up in every single relationship I was with. Because I would be with, you know, the other girl. And I'm kind of like a serial monogamist. I like the intensity of a person. You know, dating around or, you know, having sort of multiple partners at once, I get bored with it. And so, you know, it's sort of, you only have so much energy to give one person. Absolutely. So it's like, you know, like you're hot in a body and you're hot in a body and you're hot in a body, and you're hot in a body. It becomes very mechanical. Like I said, I think the depth of knowing somebody, you know, whether it's for a week or 2 months or a year, the depth of knowing one person is what I love. But I realized that with every relationship that I had, where I'd look at the girl and, like, I wouldn't necessarily say it, but I'm like, you're not a ballerina. I can't, you know, you're never going to understand, you know, the part of me that's important to me. This isn't going to last. And that was literally every single relationship. Mm-hmm. And I knew that, like, I always knew that going in. I'm like, yeah, this is not going to work out long-term, but, like, whatever, you know, like, I'm going, let's enjoy ourselves. But, you know, the last long-term relationship I had, that was the same thing. It came up where I realized, you know, one, I want you, but I actually don't want to do this. Two, what I want to do, I haven't done for, you know, almost 7-8 years. You know, and three, if I want to create a life for myself where I can be myself, I have to create that. You know, so relative to, you know, the thing I've created online, all that, it's a support doing ballet, honestly. It's big. Mm-hmm. Like, if I can train every day, which I love, and I can perform, that's what I live for. So it's two spheres of reality. You know, like, that's why I just find it very ironic where I have the, you know, sort of the digital reality where it's men, male dominated, it's guys, you know, this, you know, how to be a man. My actual physical reality, it's all women. It's 90% women, and it's ballet. But it balances out. And the digital does support the physical. You know, so, you know, my, like, long-term goal for that, I always want to be able to perform. And, you know, at some point, probably in my 40s, I would say, like, teach. Because, yeah, I love it to the level where I would teach it, you know, ballet master. You know, digital world, it's just, you know, goal for that. Get the platform as big as it can. You know, I realize if you set up an online business properly, it's a livelihood that, you know, is sort of infinitely self-sustaining if you, you know, go about it the right way. And, you know, it gives you unlimited growth, more or less. So I think the two will probably work out. And I don't have any plans really to integrate them fully. It's more so just a situation where I take from that world and I, you know, put into this one, and it kind of just this nice exchange back and forth. So whether that's a goal or not long term, I mean, long term, I could also say, you know, have kids, start a family, but relative to the things that are important to me, we got the soul. It's the ballet, it's the art.
That makes sense to me. So, I mean, sometimes you don't know the exact specific details along the way, but as long as you know what you're passionate about and what you can't live without, those things usually come. You have to trust, you know, in the flow sometimes, you know, you have to trust that the things will emerge, and you can't always prescribe them or predict them, but you know, you're confident that it will work out. You know that you're going to put everything you have into getting there. Even if you're not, you know, you don't have the whole thing strategized in the beginning, because, you know, that's a fool's game sometimes. You know, you're going to have surprises and you have to adjust and fluctuate and you know, adapt. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think I answered the question, but
you did.
No, it's one of those things, like, I think with ballet, there's this factor of, like, the man, ballet is a man, you have to be able to lead. It taught me that really early on, like, you know, that concept of personal leadership. You have to be able to lead, otherwise you're not a good partner. You're not a good dancer. Yeah, and it's always like, it's like I said, it's like the mirror effect of like, if you want to learn about yourself as a man, like in a way, like look at what a woman is and what does that tell you about you. Yeah, so I always feel like I'm learning about myself, you know, the whole process of doing it, which is very gratifying. It's very fulfilling.
I think that's essential. I mean, I don't remember meeting a man along my journeys that has had both elements of, you know, that masculinity, that standard of masculinity, without it becoming just narcissism and aggression and ego. Having that other side is so important, because that is what will help create the healthy relationship. I think just like in a family, if the man is not developed enough to be in that stable, balanced state of self-awareness and fortitude, the family is going to have, ill health, right? And there are going to be symptoms all over the place. I think the same way, it's like women, obviously there are women that are not balanced or healthy themselves, but for me, I'm just talking from my perspective. I feel like nobody's perfect, but it's so hard to find a man that's able to get that and develop that in themselves. And I think now I'm much better equipped at seeing it, I guess, or knowing what I'm looking for.
That's a good way of saying it. What do you wish men knew about themselves, having worked with them?
What do I wish they knew about themselves? Confidence is always a major theme. That I guess that they don't have to look for, pretending to be something else or looking at external things to make them good enough, you know, that really they're good enough in and of themselves, as long as they're connected to that. And I think you don't realize that, you know, yes, obviously, you know, being successful, having something to offer, having a life to create stability and provide to a person is important. But I think it's all of that is circumstantial. Do you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. to be able to feel like you can figure it out and make it work and get what you need. But what's important is really the tool that you are, the medium, the person. I mean, if you're not well, if you're not advanced in your own mentality, none of that matters. Then you're just a checkbook, you know? And women aren't happy with that either, you know?
I don't know why it made me laugh. I have an uncle that's going through a divorce right now. It's been like a 6-year, 7-year divorce. But yeah, him being just a checkbook, he's kind of found that out the hard way. Or it's been a very, very, very expensive process. He phrased it that way recently when I saw him. He's like, I'm basically like the checkbook for torture right now. It's like, I'm just paying for both of us to fuck each other up.
And that's sad. I mean, a lot of really messy divorces and breakups happen and they get to that point. And I think that's where we become enemies of each other, you know, like men versus women. It's women's fault, it's men's fault. And that is definitely not healthy for the genders and our dynamics. But really just being accountable for our own, not just our own happiness and success, but the way that we interact with each other, you know, and what we expect of each other. I think we need to really have the courage to look at ourselves and see our egos and how they manifest these problems. Women hurting men, you know, leaving them, abandoning them. I left my husband's, but we didn't have anything, right? It's not like we had kids and we had a lot of issues, and I'm not going to talk bad about him. But yes, I did leave him. So I will admit that. But women who actually, after 20 years of marriage and they've got, you know, young kids and they didn't work the whole time, who leave their husbands all of a sudden because their husbands are, they're very flawed and they end up in therapy with me, but they didn't know, you know, they didn't know that they were so flawed. They thought that they were doing everything right. They thought that they were successful and providing. And that's what I'm talking about. If men don't get themselves right, their minds right, and develop themselves as a human being, none of that matters. They will get left. Because ultimately, yeah, that's not enough for women. They need the romanticism. They need the man who connects with the femininity, you know, who can have that sort of idyllic life, you know, where you're in bliss. But if you're just a shell of a person who's working 80 hours a week, it's not enough.
No, it's not. That's... You see that? I've dealt with it both ways. Where you have the guys where I've had the husbands like they're good providers, like you said, they're good providers and they work, and they have the assumption, look, I'm giving her everything that she wants, and like women always want more. Yeah, it's always like the question, like, oh, it's not enough. I'm like, for as much as you will give women, they will want more from you. You know, and if it's only external, where it's the idea of like, well, I pay the bills and I keep the lights on and. You know, like I've given you, you know, it's, you know, you've seen, like I've given you everything. Like you have the house, you have this. I'm like, that's not everything she wants. You know, right. You know, she still wants you. And then at the same time, you have that contrast where you have those, and so, you know, you have those relationships where they can be like purely sexual, where it's like, you don't get along. You know, I mean, I've had those myself. Like you don't really get along at all. You really don't have anything to give each other because your personalities are very incompatible, but you have a friction that makes for like a great sexual relationship. And that's enough. Nothing else is, but that, you know, that doesn't sustain itself either. I suppose if I was to, you know, say, what's the ideal? I'm like, the ideal is that you got both. You know, there's an external game to the relationship, which is, you know, the provisionship, you know, the stuff. There's an inner game, which is the sexuality, the intimacy, you know, sort of the growth of the person, where they feel like they can be themselves and vice versa. And there's a complementarity there. And then if you have that, perhaps that will last. Perhaps. If you don't have that, or if you have a dry, I think most people more often not end up in a dry marriage is what, you know, the common outcome is, which mm-hmm. The sex is always like a testament to the health of the relationship. If that's not happening. And you know, you're counting on the fact that, you know, I guess the house is paid for, the mortgage is covered. Shit's gone bad.
Yeah. And you know, I think this is where the compliment for a woman is important. So even though we want a woman to be feminine, I don't know what this we is, but let's just go with that. we, you know, women need to be feminine, but the masculine side of a woman is the woman who has her own fortitude, who can take care of herself, who doesn't rely solely on her man as a provider, because then she's helping to prevent that dynamic from manifesting. So she's going to be out there doing her own thing. You know, and obviously I think a healthy relationship is one in which, like how we're talking about, like the man playing that masculine role and the woman being able to defer to him on some level, but it's not about complete submission. And I have this discussion with men and women who disagree with me all the time. There's a difference between choosing to defer to the man in the relationship mm-hmm. and being dependent and submissive. And so I think that's an important conscious choice in a relationship, because there has to be some kind of leadership in the home, and having a ambivalent or ambiguous leadership system in a relationship usually creates problems along the way and conflict that is not resolvable. So I think that you want a woman who is strong enough but doesn't compete with your strength.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying there?
Yeah.
That makes sense.
That makes sense. I'm trying to clarify myself, but there's that ideal, I think, at times with guys, which is always like a very false ideal, I think. The idea of like, okay, I want like a traditional woman. You know, which, like, that means what? Like, she listens to everything you fucking say and never, you know, makes a peep. I'm like, that's not going to be a healthy relationship. Like, that, you know, we'd call that's a codependent relationship. You know, or, you know, skews towards the abusive, or it's just boring. You know, there's no personality to that. But, you know, the aspect of having a healthy relationship. Yeah, where, okay, you have a male role, you have a feminine role, you have masculine, you have feminine. If you're in a position as the man where you are leading on the things you should lead at, then she is free to make the choices she wants to make within her own realm of choices. If there's no leadership at all from any party, then you end up with like the You end up with where are we going to dinner conversation. You choose.
Right.
And that triggers a whole cascade of an argument because nobody wants to pick anything. There is no one that has any sense of direction with that.
Right.
Which I've always found that fascinating because I brought that up in Twitter discussions and people are, you know, there's like a certain astoundment I've raised from some men. Like, so you told her where we're going to go eat. I'm like, it's not that I told her you can only eat here, but there's a plan to it. Mm-hmm. And let's go eat here. You like this place? Or you know what? If you don't like that, is there something else you'd want? Yes, no? Okay. Well, it's directional. It's directional. I'm not laying it upon her of like, well, you just make all the decisions. If you cannot make a choice, a conscious choice to lead about where you're going to consume food, what the hell else are you missing out on? And then, you know, I've realized like why, and then I've, you know, having dated a lot, I've had this conversation with women where it's so freaking aggravating when you have a guy where like, he can't make a choice about anything. He wants to ask you first about what you should do or what he should do.
Right.
Like he's going to the point of like ambivalence. Yeah, you have a whole breakdown there because the dynamic is completely flat. You know, are you leading yourself at all? No, but what you're demonstrating is that there's no sense of leadership and there's no stability to that.
Right.
You know, it would be very much a situation of like, you know, almost like being unemployed. So what are you doing with yourself? I don't know. What do you think I should do? Mm-hmm. That's not attractive at all. But then you also obviously have the contrast. You have the women where they want to make all the decisions.
Right.
The problem with that is that you have women where when a woman establishes that relationship with a man that she is the one that leads, she never respects the guy because there's always this undercurrent of, well, I have to basically be your mom and tell you what to do. Mm-hmm. And then you end up with like sort of the mommy marriage of, you know, like, you know, or even like the mommy girlfriend where like you basically want a girl that just takes care of you and you get to say, well, I'm the man though. You know, I'm the one sleeping with her. I'm like, yeah, you are, but no, that's not a relationship. You know, or if it is one, it's one where it's going to break down or she's going to hate you at some point.
Right.
There's a resentment and anger to all the interaction. You can see that in the relationship where the woman is angry at the man for essentially not fulfilling the role, but that's never said explicitly. You know, it's hard to say that explicitly. It's implicit.
Yes. I would say that is personally relevant to my marriage story.
personally relevant. It's always been the fascinating thing to me since, you know, with women, like women are implicit by nature. When a guy doesn't get it, you know, the act of having to explain yourself as, you know, to be a woman, you have to fully explain the situation to a man of what it is and what's happening. It's, you know, it's all the things he couldn't see, you know, not see physical, but see on that, you know, that level beneath of, if you pay attention to a woman and you watch her, she will tell you everything. Yeah, it's very much always think like the sexual dynamic where, you know, you can approach sex from that, you know, sort of like 15-year-old boy standpoint of like the very mechanical, you know, mm-hmm. So if I touch her here for this length of time with this many strokes, with this amount of pressure and, you know, like do this with my tongue, well, then she's going to, you know, she'll orgasm. Like that's not really what sex is. I mean, there's a mechanical, well, yeah, no kidding. You know, it's physical. But, you know, what thrills women, it's a mental aspect. You get inside her head and that's what makes it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, profound. It's not, you know, it's not this external model of just like you have a body in front of you and if you do these steps, yeah, and obviously men are very logical that way, like if you do a b and c then okay, like you've fulfilled her, you've given her enough. That's not it. So yeah, as a man I realize a lot of guys they just don't see women, they don't see what women are telling them. Mm-hmm. And then when they finally hit that point where it needs to be explained to them, like no kidding, she's gonna be angry at you. And then, you know, but then at the same time, too, when you don't see anything, you can't make a choice about anything. So that exactly. Lack of sight is a very big issue.
Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of the men that struggle are either, like you said, in one end, at one end or the other. They're either really sort of, you know, complacent, or they're very, you know, arrogant and controlling. And I think that men don't focus on balance as much as women do. I find a lot more women talk about balance and creating that in their lives versus men think in extremes.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I think it's a logical thing for the male brain where it's, you know, like if this isn't working, well, you just go the opposite direction. Or if you think something's working, then you heighten the angle of the direction that you're taking. You know, the problem is it just makes you blind to a lot of things. Yeah, that's why I've, you know, it's always been, I guess, personal opinion, but like women see more clear than men do in regards to, you know, personality and being. Yeah, you could argue, obviously, the male brain's much more logical. No kidding. You know, so there's certain things of objectivity that men are better at. But women, female perception is much more attuned than, you know, a man's is, generally speaking. You know, but then the guys that get that, like, they're the ones I think are successful women, just, or at least in the standpoint of they have good relationships where it's not a battle to make themselves understood.
Right.
Yeah, that's the other factor for a lot of men I've seen, where it's not only can you not see things clearly, but trying to be clear and explain yourself is like that is like a monumentally difficult task. And there's also there's an aspect of almost ego there too, like you don't want to have to explain yourself either. So then having the situation explained to you, it's like you sort of it's a double-edged sword that way. You're pissed off if the woman gets things better than you do, and then you're also pissed off that you didn't get it. Then you're also pissed off that you're having to talk about it.
Right. And speaking of talking about, I mean, communication is such an important element, and I find that a lot of men are really poor communicators in general because of what you're mentioning. I think getting men to be better at clarifying and asserting themselves in communicating and verifying and figuring out what's going on is so important, because that's a lot of what I focus on too. The step one in a lot of my couples therapy is, you know, when the conflict is happening, people aren't listening, like you said. The one person is sort of telling their story, and then the next person's jumping in and defending themselves, and they're having two different conversations, two different arguments. And I have to be like, whoa. Let's just do this. Like, if you're here, you're paying me. You're going to try to trust that I have a valid opinion. So let's try this my way for a second. So then I just get the one person to speak, and then the next person recaps what they said. And that's such a huge shift for people. I'm like, this is so simple, but it's not. It's not common, right? So when people actually get called out for that, because you know they'll try to repeat what they heard and they have no idea what this person just said, and or they just instinctively go to interpreting or defending, correcting what they said from their perspective, I'm like, no interpretations, just paraphrase what you heard. And that is the process of clarification. And then the person can say, well, actually, you got it mostly right, but I wanted to emphasize this piece. This is the piece that was important to me for you to hear and for me to know that you heard. And so then they'll say, like, okay, yes, you know, and that is missing in couples and communication and interaction. And such a basic and essential piece that I hope people can maybe work on. I don't know. I think but before they get to therapy, just in general, to want to be better communicators.
That's really useful. There's an exercise in choreography that I've done. I mean, I've done it lots of times. But when you're learning how to choreograph, obviously you're learning how to create movement, but you also have to be able to create a world for somebody where if I have you in front of me, I say, okay, we're gonna do these series of movements and we're gonna tell a story. You have to do that and make it clear. But it's a mirroring exercise where, like, you'll move and I'll move how you move. And you match each other.
Right.
But yeah, and there's a level of, you know, it's fun. There's a level of, you know, intimacy and sensuality to it. But you have to pay attention to the person. And it's not like you're interpreting the movement where you do something like, no, I'm going to do my spin. Like, you do the exact same thing. And you really have to watch each other. And as you build towards that, you start to have this common dialogue where eventually you don't need words to talk. You know, you've got that connection going. But it just made me think of that. But that's such a good point.
Oh, I like that.
For couples. Well, I think the choreography aspect is where I kind of learned how to speak with women, I would say, since I realized I've always done that where I recap. You know, you tell me something, I'll recap it, and then I'll say what I think, or I'll ask for further clarification. But I remember that in choreography, having to do these kinds of exercises where it's like, okay, you have to be able to speak without words. So that means you have to pay attention to each other. And if they're going to speak with you body-wise, you have to be able to speak back in the way they're speaking to you. So, you know, you have to match perception. You know, in the context of relationship, like that gives you a shared reality to work with. If we're communicating about the same thing, then we should be able to reach some level of understanding with each other where, you know, life's good. Like, we get each other. Right. If you're communicating about two different things and I'm telling you something and you're wanting to spin it to what suits you, you're always going to have the clash.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
A lot of what I do. I have to be honest, my phone is about to die.
Yes, it's all right. It's all right. Oh, wait, you're on your phone right now. You're recording this or I'm recording?
No, it's just, I don't know. I think I started with a low battery, but
it is okay.
Do you feel like I have shared about stuff that you were intending to talk about and giving my perspective?
I think, yeah. No, well, you know, part of the reason I wanted to do this was, I talk so much about the need for, like, you know, for the gym and the fall. I mean, like, you need to be able to have it, you know, be at ease with women and be able to speak and just enjoy the conversation. And then I realized, you know, for a lot of them, like, I wondered, have they ever seen a model of that? Sometimes, you know, like, people, you know, they go through childhood, you know, perhaps you have people in situations where they've never seen a healthy interaction take place where a man and woman actually talked and just they had an enjoyable conversation.
Right.
Yeah, and part, you know, so far my impetus for doing this, I'm like, you know, why don't I, you know, talk to some ladies that follow me, whom I like, who I know I could have a real conversation with.
Yeah.
And aside from me just enjoying the conversation myself, since I know I'm going to, that can be somewhat of a, you know, exemplary of like, see, this is how you can kind of get along.
That's a great point, because there's no reason why these types of conversations shouldn't happen in a normal circumstance. You know, we shouldn't have to have a podcast to have a real, you know, connecting, authentic, intelligent conversation.
Yes. So hopefully,
I hope that your followers and your audience do try to emulate that for themselves in their own way, because I think it can bring a lot of contentment and fulfillment into their lives that maybe they don't realize, or maybe they think it's, I don't know, soft or vulnerable or whatever that is. But this is how people should be talking to each other when they're in, well, I'm not saying we're in a relationship, but you know what I mean? Like the type of conversation that people have behind closed doors when they're really encountering them as a full human being rather than just looking at the external or what they can do for them.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well said. So I'll shut this down at this stage. Where can people find you? Yeah, to give you the pitch.
Sure. Well, my website is fully functional. And
cool.
That is drbabelovelife.com. And my email is connect@drbabelovelife.com. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at the same handle, Dr. Babe Love Life. And I am hopeful that once I put my second season of my TV show out, and that will be online, hopefully people will watch it, because it's the theme of the TV show is intersexual dynamics. And the show's called Love Life with Dr. Babe. And I used a lot of the concepts that I had access to from Twitter in curating the season. It's 8 episodes, and it's really interesting. So I have a male and female on each show that aren't in a relationship, but who give their perspective as well on some controversial topics. And it'll be exciting to see what people think. So hopefully I'll put it out there when it's available and people can tell me what they think of it.
Let me know. I know you're trying to grow your business right now, or your presence that way, which I mean, it's probably a whole different conversation, which I we could have. But cool. No, very, very cool. Awesome.
Yes. So, great to talk to you.
Likewise.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome, my lady.
All right.